Hello, this is Elodie Reed, digital producer for Vermont Public Radio. This podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity. Yay!
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. The state of Vermont's current problems with its pension plans for state employees and teachers go back decades, back to the 90s at least, when dollars that should have gone into retirement fund coffers were earmarked for other things, setting up a massive gap between what the state had promised its teachers and workers and what it was actually going to be able to pay out. In the 2000s, alarms were sounded. I can find shows that Vermont Edition did on this topic as far back as 2009. And in 2012, we spoke with State Treasurer Beth Pierce about an unfunded liability of $3 billion for the pension fund and health care expenses. It was a staggering number that averaged almost $5,000 of debt for every person in the state. Adjustments were made, but not enough. Earlier this year, Treasurer Pierce released a report recommending the state reduce some of its benefits to future retirees, because otherwise, the state will need to come up with about $96 million a year to make up the difference between what it owes people in the system and what it's going to be able to pay. In a year where many state employees and certainly all teachers have felt incredible pressure to work under tremendously difficult circumstances, this is an extra hard pill to swallow. So what can be done? Well, joining us for the show today to talk this over is State Treasurer Beth Pierce. Welcome back to the show, Treasurer Pierce.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
We're also going to hear the voices of some teachers who have shared thoughts with us today, and we'll be speaking with the president of the Vermont State Employees Association. But Treasurer Pierce, let me start by asking you to sort of walk through the steps with me to sort of just get a basic understanding of what happened, what the problem is, and what solutions have been proposed to fix it over the years. So simply put, how unfunded is the current pension plan? What's the estimation for the gap between what the fund has or is expected to have and what it will need to meet its obligations?
Okay, well, again, thank you very much for having me here. This is a difficult subject, particularly in these times. You know, teachers and state police and state employees are on the front lines, during this health crisis, and I so much appreciate what they've done. In that context, these recommendations are painful, and the recommendations are not submitted lightly, but with the recognition that action is needed, and we need to continue to provide retirement securities for all of our employees. These recommendations are just that. They're open for discussion and looking forward to working with stakeholders with the objective of finding a solution. This is not pleasant, but I think we can work together to find solutions. You know, and I want to stress that these changes should come within the context of a defined benefit plan and not a change to the defined contribution plan or a similar plan. Now, simply put, defined benefit plans provide more security, retirement security, and they are less expensive than DC plans. You know, and we've looked at the data over the years, and I've come to that conclusion, as have many experts, and we continue to look for defined benefit plans as the basis of any retirement security. You know, these changes that we're looking at right now are painful, but they pale in consideration to the if we were to move to a DC plan.
Okay, so you don't want to move to a defined contribution plan. You like the defined benefits plan that state employees and teachers are currently under, that they are under a defined benefits plan.
Right.
So how much? So as I mentioned, you know, this stems back, 20, 30 years now to when the state wasn't putting in enough at the time. And it's like how many of us think of our retirement plans and if we have them in whatever kind of plan it is. If you're not putting enough in now, you're not going to have enough built up by the time you actually need it. It's a little bit different with the state employees pension plans, but still you can sort of think of it that way. But so what's the gap?
Well, if you take a look at the plans, the state plan, the current unfunded liability is $1.04 billion. So $1,040,465. Current funded ratio is 66.4%. That is a downturn from the prior funded ratio of 70.7. And if you take a look at this plan, it was coming into the Great Recession, it was at 100.8%. 8%. The state plan had, as did all plans across the country, some deterioration because of the Great Recession. But as you look at the trajectory of this plan, it was 77.7, then 75, then 71, and now we're down to 66.4%. So we've seen some significant deterioration of the funded status of the plan. When you look at the teachers' plan, the funded ratio right now is 51.3%. And part of that was, as you mentioned, the underfunding from 1990 to 2007. The plan was underfunded by the legislature and the administration. It suffers from that, and as a result, came into the Great Recession less well-funded in the 80% category. And it has moved steadily down since then. We're talking 65%, then 60, 59, 55, and our current level of 51.3% with an unfunded liability of $1.9 billion.
Wow. That's a lot of money. And, you know, you've mentioned some of the reasons that, and we've talked about, that stem back from, you know, the 90s. There are other reasons, too. And we can start by talking a little bit about some that have been outside of the state control, lower fund returns than anticipated, you know, coming out of the Great Recession. But we also have seen some pretty marked gains in the stock market in recent years. So, you know, can you talk a little bit about exactly how that relates to these pension plans?
Well, certainly. About 60% of every dollar that's paid to a retiree in their benefits is through investment income. So investment income is very, very much part of the equation. The returns are at estimate right now is 7%. Back a few years ago, pre-recession, someplace around 8, the assumption went down to about 7.5 in 2017, and now it's 7%. And it reflects the national average with pension funds of moving with lower and lower investment returns. Simply put, the market right now, despite the stock market, you have to have diversified assets. You don't want to put all your eggs in one basket, as they say. And from a diversified pension plan, we're seeing some reductions across the country in terms of assumptions. The 7% is right in the average. Some of our neighboring states are below 7% in their projections. Now, you have to take a look at investments. They're going to change from time to time. You're going to see some great numbers, then you're going to see some poor numbers. It depends on the market. And as you know, we have great fluctuation. Several months back, we saw the market take a downturn. The results, for instance, in 2019 were very good. The results in 2020, not so much, although it was 4%. But if you took a look across the country, pension plans were below 3, some in that 250 range. It was so we did actually better. We were in the top half of the country in terms of our position, in terms of our peer relationship, but certainly not what we were looking for. On the other hand, if you look back to 6/30/19, we had 6%, but our 5-year average was about 8.1%, and our 10-year average was about 8.5%.
So you think the 7% was reasonable? Because that was always one of the questions, was the 7.5% expected return even a reasonable expectation to begin with to make us think that we were funding our pension obligations better than we were?
Well, the 7.5 was what the actuaries recommended, as well as the investment advisor. And the investment advisor is not a person that sells investments. This is not someone that says, I can get you 12% or whatever it might be. It's a fiduciary and investment advisor that's hired to assist the pension plans. And both of them came up with something in the area of 7.5. One was 7.5, the other was 7.6. We went with the lower number. So we're not going to go out and guess what a number is, and we're not going to go out and say, we think it should be this. We're going to rely on professional judgment. But since then, the investment market has moved in a different direction. Investment rates of return assumptions have been lowered across the country. You set these every few years. We actually set this in 2017, getting to the 7.5. 3 years later, we're talking about 7%, 3-plus years. Typically, we do what's called an experience study, where we test our assumptions every 5 years. That's by statute. But we can do them earlier as needed. And again, we're seeing this this trend across the country. Our pension plans as well, with a 50-some-odd percent funded ratio and a 70-some-odd percent funded ratio, you have to have a little bit of downside risk mitigation in the plans, because you cannot take a hit like you did in the Great Recession. So we've had some downside asset risk mitigating strategies. We're looking at those right now and saying, can we do something a little different and pick up a little bit more return in the process? Mm. The investments are managed by a committee called the Vermont Pension Investment Committee. I'm a member. I'm not the sole trustee. There are six members who then pick a chair, a seventh member, and he has investment experience, and as do many of the members of the committee, but a professional there, and he gets a very, very small salary. One-third of what my salary is scheduled at, so he's doing a lot of work for not a lot of dollars, but he's committed. It's Tom Galanka, former city councilor in Montpelier, and a very committed individual to making changes in the system. He's been chair for 4 years, and we've had a significant change to the better in those 4 years.
So, Treasurer Pierce, I could go through a lot of these things with you, and I think it's helpful to understand, well, how did we get here and what did we get to? But we have Amy Town, president of the Vermont State Employees Association, ready to join us, but she can only stay for a little while. So I'm going to rush us through to what your proposal is very briefly, and then I'll come back with you in later parts of the show to go through some of this a little bit more thoroughly. But very broad strokes, I mean, literally like the headline or the summary of your paper, what is it that you think needs to be done in order to make this work out, given the gaps we've been talking about?
Well, you know, I get into the weeds, so I will try not to do that at the moment. But recommendation number one was to maintain a DB system, that defined benefit plan. Recommendation two was not to make any changes for existing retirees. We think that's very important. Recommendation three was to continue to fund the actuarially determined employer contribution called ADEC, something that didn't happen, as we just said, from 1990 to 2007, particularly for the teachers system. We also had a recommendation around health care liabilities and creating a path toward pre-funding of those so that we get a better value out of those as well. And we've presented that to the legislature. We're going to continue to work in that direction. We also made some significant and painful recommendations for the benefit structures for both the state and the teachers' plan. Some reductions and/or eliminations of cost of living adjustments for active employees upon retirement. Increasing the years used to calculate the average final compensation. When you're looking at a pension benefit, it's usually you take their average final compensation times years of service in a benefit formula. We usually use something in the area of 3 years for most of the state employees and the teachers. We're talking about expanding that average so that from three to either 5 or 7 years. Also changing,
which would reduce it down, presumably, because, you know, if you assume that you sort of make a little bit more each year or over the course of your career, then including more years would bring that number down, that sort of actual number for calculating your salary. Yes,
that is correct. Okay. And we're also talking about pushing out the years of retirement for what's called normal retirement as opposed to an early retirement, and using a combination of years and age. So, for instance, rule of 87 or rule of 90, so that you take a look at your years of service and your age and combine those for the purposes of eligibility, and increasing employee contributions. So that is the crux of the recommendations. They differ for each system, but they're around that area of focus in both systems.
All right, so let's pause there, because I think, you know, those bullet points that you just laid out are the sort of headlines that everybody is focusing on, with good reason, because these are the recommended changes. And let's bring in Amy Town now. As I mentioned, Amy is president of the Vermont State Employees Association. Amy, you've been a state employee for 21 years, and you work in the Department for Children and Families now. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, you know, this is the part that sticks in the craw of so many people, and I imagine for many of the members that you represent as well, that the recommendation is to add to the employee contribution and essentially reduce the payout and eliminate or reduce, depending on the plan, to the amount of a cost of living increase that would ordinarily go along with these benefits. So I can't imagine you're happy, but on the other hand, we're looking at billions of dollars in unfunded liabilities. So, you know, what is your perspective? How do you think we should move forward now?
You know, state employees have always been willing to step up and do their share. And it's unfortunate that this trend of asking workers to shoulder the responsibility of balancing the budget or pension tensions always seems to fall on us. You know, our median pension is just over $19,000. So it's not like state employees are receiving these massive pensions. And, you know, I understand the proposals. I think that VSEA is doing a lot of member education around Treasurer Pierce's proposals and recommendations, trying to get a sense of what people feel comfortable doing. But the reality is, you know, as Treasurer Pierce has alluded to many times, state workers are heroes. They're committed. We need to really remember who the people are behind these numbers. Our state employees are plowing the roads, they're processing record high applications for unemployment and economic programs. We have state employees that are actively testing and vaccinating and contact tracing. They're managing our court systems. They're cleaning and sanitizing our testing at, you know, our work sites and our facilities. And we have correction workers who are facing COVID every day, and we have the lowest COVID rates in our facilities in the country. You know, our state employees have stepped up during this crisis. We always step up, and to have this discussion around paying in more, receiving less of a benefit regarding our pension is just unbearable at this time. It's unfortunate. We understand the position that the state is in as far as the flux of the pension, but to balance that on the back of the workforce is just, I think, a very big lift.
So what would you propose, given what we just heard, the state employees pension fund 66.4% funded with a $1.4 billion unfunded liability? I mean, given that reality, what do you think the state should do to pay for to pay these benefits?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think that there needs to be a dedicated revenue source, period. I think that there needs to be some further discussion. I think the treasurer's proposals look at making, you know, pretty drastic changes overnight, and we need a more measured approach. You know, with major changes come major impacts, and we don't understand fully what those impacts are going to be. So looking at potential revenue sources, Senator Hooker is proposing a bill that would tax 3% on households with adjusted gross income of $500,000, specifically earmarked for the pension fund. This group of Vermonters have seen massive income growth over the course of the last few years, especially during this pandemic. So why are we more comfortable asking state workers who receive an average pension of $20,000 to pay more when we have, you know, the potential of tapping a revenue source? I think a revenue source is paramount in this discussion.
You know, the list of things that have been proposed to be paid for by taxing rich Vermonters is long, as you know. And so when the proposal is floated, as you have, to say, you know, we should essentially tax wealthier Vermonters in order to get this benefit back, there are other things that other lawmakers and other Vermonters say wealthy Vermonters should be taxed in order for the state to get. Do you think, you know, that it's going to be supported to say, you know, your retirement benefits should be paid by wealthy Vermonters when there are so many other needs as well?
I recognize the list of needs is very long. I understand that on a personal level. I'm a single mom with four kids. My list of needs is pretty long. But when you look at where's the fire, you need to triage on that list. What rises to the top? What is most critical? What is in desperate need of the funding most immediately. And certainly, I would think that the pension fund rises high on that list.
Right now, the proposal would not do any damage or make any changes to people who are currently drawing down retirement benefits. Do you think that's fair, that those who are already, who have already sort of left the system and are drawing down those benefits should be able to be held harmless in this?
I think our retirees were promised a retirement and should have the ability to retire in dignity and not worry.
So yes, they should, that part of the proposal you agree with.
I don't believe that we should be looking to hold, I don't believe that we should be looking to harm our retirees.
What do you think you know, where do you see sort of areas where your members can work with the state? You know, there have been a lot that Treasurer Pierce mentioned, including increasing the contributions that state employees and teachers make. Is that something that you think your members are willing to do if some of these other issues were changed?
That's a really great question. Thank you for asking. So VSBA has done a lot of educational meetings with our members. We arranged 14 meetings at lunchtime, on weekends, and in evenings just to really have this difficult conversation with our members and let them know the state of the pension, but also really reach out to them to hear what they feel most comfortable as a solution. We've also issued a survey, and if we had this discussion tomorrow, I'd be able to tell you.
Right, the survey's being finished today, right?
It closes later today. I can't help myself. I've been peeking at the survey results on and off for the last week, and it's really interesting because the majority of our members, and of course these results are not final, but the majority of our members seem willing to pay more, contribute more for their pension. I think people understand that they're paying more, they're investing in themselves, right? They're going to receive that on the side, on the back end of things. What I'm also seeing is people are not looking favorably at the rule of 90, the idea of working longer. On a personal note, I've been with the state for 21 years, and when I looked at the rule of 90, it's adding an additional 4 years of service for me. 4 years doesn't seem like a lot, but it's a lot. So, you know, things like the rule of 90, the COLA cap of 24,000, people are on the fence about, but, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see how the survey kind of shifts out. But ultimately, I think our workforce really needs to see that this is not going to be an expectation for us to carry this load on our own. I mean, we are dedicated. We want to do what we can, but this cannot be a one-man game. It can't.
Amy, before I let you go, you know, when we think about this sort of in the larger picture and Vermonters coming to this issue and perhaps being able to see two sides of it, one of which is the state promised these benefits. It should pay these benefits. This was a promise made to state employees and to teachers who have been doing their part this whole time and are now being told, sorry, we don't have the money for you, or all of the money for you. On the other hand, you can also look at many Vermonters who are struggling, many of whom don't even have a $20,000 retirement plan, and you know, who are looking at their potential work life and saying, I'm going to work till I'm 75, I'm going to work till I'm 80, I'm going to work till I'm dead. I don't have the money to retire. You know, that so many Vermonters and Americans in general are in, if not a worse boat, the same boat of saying, yeah, I don't have what I thought I was going to have, or I'm not going to be able to make it. You know, how do you hope that people contextualize this issue? Now, granted, in a way that favors your members, but in why Vermonters should care if they're not state employees or teachers about this issue when, you know, everybody has their own pressing issues as well.
Thank you. That's a really great question. So I look at the pension as a recruitment tool, but also a retention tool. And people choose to take employment or seek employment with the state because of the benefits that they offer. Personally, I work with the state. I continue to work with the state because of the security of my benefits. I like knowing that I'll be able to retire with my defined benefit contribution because, again, single mom with four kids, I don't have a savings.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to know that I have that to fall back on. And then as a recruitment tool, it's really interesting because we're looking, constantly looking to bring new talent, young talent into the state. And the pension, the defined benefit program really does bring people in. So to modify it now is contrary to what we hear when the governor speaks, you know, trying to bring in people to Vermont. So I understand the idea of folks not necessarily understanding why the pension is a big deal. They don't receive a big deal, but it's a benefit that was promised. And, you know, when you take this employment, you know, our professional level employees, so our nurses, our IT people, our, you know, there's a variety of professional level staff, they take these positions in state employment, but they could be making much more in the public sector, but they take the job in the public sector because of the pension. Mm. So it's unfortunate to be in this position where here we are negotiating potentially with ourselves to try to save a benefit that we were promised at hire.
That's Amy Towne, president of the Vermont State Employees Association. Amy, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Pat writes in to say, I left a career in the private sector when I was 57 and took less salary when I joined the state, but I was fine with it because of the promised pension. I love working for Vermont consumers, but it seems unfair to change the plan for current state employees who were counting on it. And Robin says, I'm a state employee, and I'm working above and beyond to protect Vermonters and those who visit and work here from the impact of COVID-19. I, along with my colleagues, are on phone lines all day, giving vaccines, administering tests, answering questions from businesses, schools, visitors, and vulnerable adults. We are all working under extremely challenging conditions across the board, and the usual work we do at the Department of Health, which is not happening, will be piled up when we do reach a sense of normalcy, and it'll be hard to catch up. Attacking the pension now is an attack on us, and it's a slap in the face. This was a contract, not just a promise, and we kept our end of the bargain. We should not have to carry the burden of this issue. It's demoralizing in the face of a pandemic for this to be happening. What other ways can revenue be created, such as appropriately taxing all the wealthy folks moving into our state and buying million-dollar homes? Kate McCann is a teacher at U32 Middle and High School in Montpelier, and she sent us her thoughts on the proposal.
Teachers are not responsible for the system's financial issues. They have paid in every dollar that they've been asked to pay, decade after decade. The agreement between teachers and the state of Vermont was entered into long before I became a teacher in Vermont. The treasurer's recommendations are just that. They are her recommendations. But to us, those who have poured years, none more challenging than this one, into putting Vermont students first, those recommendations are a non-starter in determining the best move forward. We need a strategy to ensure that this state lives up to its promise to those who are in the business of building long-lasting, close personal connections with Vermont's young people.
ZB writes on Twitter, it was said early that the only way to save our economy was to get kids back into school, but so far, no vaccinations for teachers, no hazard pay, and now they're cutting their retirement. If teachers didn't show up for work, the state would come to a screeching halt. And Joanna in Burlington says, eliminate the cost of living adjustments entirely for nearly 10,000 public school teachers, retiring them slowly into poverty. I am disgusted that this is what the state thinks is best for our educators, who put their lifetime of professional service into our Vermont schools. I cannot think of any faster way to quickly rid the system of highly qualified, educated individuals, many of whom will now seek careers outside education. And here's a message we got from Susan Rosato, a teacher at Colchester High School and the 2021 Vermont State Teacher of the Year.
The current proposals to ask teachers to increase their contribution, recalculate their investment, and most concerning, eliminate the cost of living increases has left me and my colleagues feeling demoralized. My question is, why now? Why during a pandemic are you going to kick us when we're down? Why aren't other solutions being considered? This feels like death from a thousand cuts, literally.
And let's go to Kim, who's calling in from Facedon. Hi, Kim. You're also taken up by this issue?
Yes, yes, I'm a teacher. This is my 21st year of teaching. And I would agree with every single sentiment that has been expressed by the other teachers who have spoken. I had a question specifically about, I have a comment, and that is that I would say in running my own household, if I have a giant credit card bill that I need to pay, and I have other things that I want to do, I always pay the credit card bill first. So the fact that we have a budget surplus this year, apparently, I feel like every penny of that should go to maintaining the pension structure that exists right now for teachers and state employees, because it is a contract. And the other question I had for Treasurer Pierce is, I'm curious if there have been discussions about some sort of stepped structure for this, in terms of for those retirees that are closest to retirement, they've built their entire financial projections on a set of assumptions based on a promise that was made by the state. And they don't have time to recalculate and save themselves. So I guess I'm just curious, you know, what are the ideas for not harming our teachers closest to retirement? And, you know, what does that look like moving down the line?
Yeah, Kim, thanks for the call. State Treasurer Beth Pierce, lots to respond to. I know you've been listening to all of this, to our conversation with Amy Town, and then as well to the comments that we heard from teachers and Kim's question.
All right. So let's start with having a dialogue, and I think that's very important. I was pleased that the VCA members in their testimony, or their written testimony to the Senate GovOps, pointed out that they were looking to work with us and committed to continuing a dialogue with me and with members of the General Assembly to identify an equitable and sustainable solution. So we need to stay working together, and I think that that's very, very important. You know, some of the ideas that you just talked about were in our recommendations. We talked about looking at additional revenue sources. Now, I'm not a tax specialist. I'm not the economist for the state, but certainly we want to have a conversation about what dollars may be available this year, and to assist with that, taking a look at setting up some legislation that would put money in reserves for this in subsequent years if in fact you end the year with a surplus. So those are on the table. We've talked about...
Can I ask you, we just heard the governor's budget, and I think he started in his budget address thanking you for your proposal, and if not in his actual budget address, he's done it elsewhere. Mm-hmm. But why not, to Kim's question and other questions about why not take that surplus? That wasn't in his budget. There's a lot of other places that money is going. Did you ask him to put that surplus toward the pension fund?
Well, I think in our recommendations, if you take a look at our recommendations, we said to the extent that additional COVID CARES Act money are available, we would want to work with the administration and the General Assembly to paying down some of this principal, and considering using excess revenues from the Federal CARES Act to establish a reserve, or going forward to take some pressure off of this with a plan and statute. Again,
were you disappointed not to see that actually specifically addressed in the budget?
Well, I was pleased that the governor's budget did fund the ADEC, and I think that that's important given the increase in the ADEC this year of $96.6 million. We were pleased to see that. I think the discussion about what to do with those additional revenues and how that will work is something that the governor and the legislature will be discussing over the next few months, and we certainly will be part of that conversation and making the pitch for pensions. You know, the other side of this is the ADEC itself. Again, it was 96.
And ADEC, again, is Actuarially Determined Employer Contribution. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay, so this is basically what the state is putting in.
That's correct. And for this coming year, 2022, that's about $316 million. By 2030, that's going to be $402 million. And by 2038, that's $512 million, you know, half $1 billion. So we need to talk about these issues and have a discussion. The longer we wait, the problem is worse. you know, for me, these are very, very painful. I would agree that the teachers are on the front line, state workers are on the front line. They're doing terrific work. But I want to have security for them in the future, for the next generation of teachers, the next generation of state employees, and the generation after that. And, you know, from my end, we need to pay attention to the trends that we're seeing over at the legislature. During my testimony last week, the Senate Gov Ops Chair made a statement at the end, and it said, "Voices for changing to a defined contribution system are swelling up. This crisis we are in is seeding that." Now, I would like to see us get to a point where we would work together so that this doesn't occur, that moving to a DC plan, defined contribution, simply because it provides less and less opportunity for retirement security. With all these changes that we're
explain
talking
why. About. Is that the kind of system that many of us who have 401ks, we're in the other system compared to what you're describing?
Sure. So in a defined benefit plan, the employee puts in his or her contribution. The state puts in its contribution, the ADEC, and we invest those dollars. And I said about 60% of the dollars that a person receives in retirement are from investment income. In a defined contribution plan, you put in your dollars as a state employee or as a teacher, and the administration or it's appropriated the dollars for that. And then you get to do your own investments. And some people are very good at that. Most have other careers. They're not investment professionals. And they might go for the hot stock, or they might put it into a what's called a stable value, which is great when you're close to retirement. But when you're 25, putting it in without in an investment that doesn't keep up with the rate of inflation, at the end, you get a sum of dollars. And if you run out of money, if you live past your assets, you're at risk for being on public assistance. You're at risk for lack of dignity in retirement. I appreciated what Amy said about dignity. I think that's very, very important. So a DC plan provides less security, and it is more expensive for the state. That's something that gets missed in the discussion. And I'd be happy to have a second session with you folks on the merits of a DC plan versus a DB plan, because they are more expensive and they do not provide the best value for the taxpayer.
Okay, so let's also though address the question that Kim asked about, you know, how do you make sure that those who are close to retirement, we've already discussed the fact that those who are in retirement who are drawing down their benefits, that your proposal doesn't change what they would be receiving because they're already sort of in that system and have set their expectations. But Kim is saying, so are teachers who and state employees who may be close to retirement now. Is there a sort of a stepped or tiered approach that you could take or that the state could take to addressing this so that those who are older aren't, in effect, worse off?
Okay. Well, I think that that's a very good question, and presenting the options, particularly with the state system, we talked about those. We talked about eliminating the COLA altogether for active employees upon retirement. We also looked at eliminating the COLA for all actives except for those within 5 years of normal retirement. Took a look at that. We took a look at creating a threshold so that the first $24,000 of a retiree's benefit would still have COLA, and anything beyond that would not be subject to COLA. That provides a retirement security net. In fact, that was in what's called option number 4 in our report, and I would encourage folks to take a look at that. Frankly, it's the one that I feel most comfortable with because it does provide a retirement security net, so to speak. Now, that's with the state system. With the teacher system, we have not gone as far with the recommendations. We're still trying to work with the NEA to get a little further on these ideas, and we're still looking to work with our partners across the board to come up with solutions. We have to get to the numbers because it's very, very important. I can't imagine a scenario where we're paying $500 million years down the road to pay for these benefits. And I... my big fear is that we would move toward a DC plan. It was said in the testimony the other day, the voices for a DC plan are swelling up. And we need to be cognizant of that, create something that has retirement security. And again, even with these benefit changes, we are better off with this plan than a DC plan.
Yeah, just to read briefly from the statement of the Board of Directors of the Vermont NEA, the Teachers Union, which was published on their website after your recommendations came out, they advocate against any cuts or increased costs to current retirees and active teachers. But later on down in the statement, they do say that the Vermont NEA supports Treasurer Beth Pierce's insistence that our defined benefit system remain intact, and we applaud her resistance to any attempts to introduce a defined contribution scheme or hybrid approach. However, we cannot accept any approach that solely depends on increasing costs on and diminishing benefits for teachers. Let's go to John, who's calling in from Stratford. Hi, John. What's your perspective?
Well, I worked for 33 years as a facility manager at a school, and I'm retired now and receiving benefits through the pension plan. And I'm very grateful. You know, let's face it, most Vermonters do not have defined benefit plans. And my plan, you know, I took a little less so my wife would be able to get the pension should I die. It's a wonderful thing. Now, by gum, you know, I'm afraid that this, well, it's clear. Things were overpromised and underfunded. And I think, you know, ultimately, all the money in the pension system comes from Vermont taxpayers one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it behooves all of us who care about Vermont and realize that there are other needs besides our own personal needs to maybe give a little for the solvency of this program. And that would include not only future retirees, but those of us receiving pensions.
So, John, you're saying that you would be willing to take less in a yearly benefit if it meant that it could even things out for those who are still in the system?
No, if it meant that it ensured the solvency of the system. Everybody's going to have to give a little. And there's a hell of a lot of other needs in this state besides funding pensions. We got Lake Champlain still needs to be cleaned up. We got a ton of, we got roads and bridges that are all falling apart. We got a ton of needs in this state. And those of us who are receiving a pension have got a damn good plan, and maybe we need not those of us who are getting these. Maybe we shouldn't get a cost of living increase.
Yeah, John, thank you for sharing that. I appreciate your perspective as somebody who is drawing on your benefits, who is retired. Thank you very much for sharing that. Let's get another thought in here from Dave in Montpelier. Hi, Dave.
Hi, I'm a longtime state employee, 42 years of service. And I'm one of those people that could have retired with a full 50% pension 12 years ago. But I like my job and I continue to work. And I think there's a lot of state employees that have over 30 years that like to go to work, and the pension makes money on them. They don't lose money because they continue to pay in at the same rate and they don't earn more. So you're going to see an exodus of those people with the treasurer's proposal, and you're going to see an exodus of state employees that are within striking distance of retirement, and it's going to cost them thousands of dollars, maybe tens of thousands of dollars, to buy years of service so that they can leave. So we're going to see an exodus of biblical proportion, if you will. And my other bullet point is that this has probably been, the last several years, the best investment retirement I can remember in my lifetime, and it's hard to fathom that we just continue to slip more and more. You know the old saying, amateurs built the ark, professionals built the Titanic. I just find the recommendations immoral and reprehensible that we're going to ask state employees and frankly teachers to just suck it up again and take it on the chin while we've held up our end over and over. State employees have taken a pay cut during the recession, a two-year wage freeze. We've paid more into retirement twice. And what are we hearing now? It's like an act of God. It just came out of nowhere. All these professionals that oversee this, every year the fund gets less and less well-funded. And when I asked this question repeatedly, the only answer I got was, It's going to get worse before it gets better.
So, Dave, let me put that to the treasurer. Beth Pierce, did you mismanage the funds? You have not been in the position since the 90s, but you have been in this position since the Great Recession and through it.
Well, I think that it's important to recognize that a number of things have happened. Number one, based on the advocacy of this office and the advocacy of many members of the General Assembly, we are now paying fully the ADEC, the Actuarially Determined Employer Contribution.
Which some would say you should have been doing all along. That seems like the bare minimum to pay in what you're supposed to.
Absolutely. And now we're paying in more than the ADEC in many, many cases.
Because it wasn't paid into at that rate in earlier years, right?
Yep. So I think that the states made a commitment to do that. If you take a look at the numbers for the state system, back in 2012, the ADEC was $36 million. They paid 40, so 110%. The next year, they paid 138%. But right now, it's going from 78 in 2020, then now it's $83 million, 21, and we're now talking about going up to $120 million. We need to take a look at what's under the hood, and some of that relates, frankly, to salary and workforce changes, as well as demographics and mortality. We rely on the experts, the actuaries, and I believe they've done a good job. But when you look under the hood on some of the issues around it, again, mortality, workforce changes, the number of retirements, the turnover of staff, I think that as you see that, it's had certainly an impact. I think my bottom line here is that these are very difficult and challenging discussions, but the time to address them is now. We know that this is difficult. We want to work together to find the solutions. We're still open for comments and recommendations and having a dialogue around those. And the goal, again, is to provide security for all of our members, this generation, the next generation, and the next generation after that. And that means we need to work together to find solutions.
I'm just going to ask for a yes or no, because I know you got the 1 minute warning in your headphones a few seconds ago. But, you know, last year, Chancellor of the State College System, Jeb Spalding, put out a proposal that would close three of the campuses. And it was not well received. And in fact, it was sort of a shot across the bow to say to the legislature, do something now, and to the governor. And they did. And bridge funding has been procured. Is this a situation where you're essentially calling the bluff of the legislature and the governor to say, do something now, or this is what we're going to have to do? Or do you really think your proposal is the best possible shot?
I think the proposal and the parameters around it are important and good recommendations. Bottom line is there's still room for negotiation.
That's State Treasurer Beth Pierce. Treasurer Pierce, thanks very much for talking with us today.
Thank you very much.